Welcome to another round of Boardroom or Miro Board. Today we talk retrospectives with Agile coach Maria. Let's go. First question. You've spent 2 hours in a team retro, but the only input you've heard is Dave's. Boardroom or Miro Board?
Boardroom. In Miro, Dave can't hog the space because everyone can add thoughts anonymously, online at the same time.
Correct. Next. You need the team to act on feedback fast, so you turn all those retro notes into Jira tasks instantly.
Miro all the way. And I can assign those tasks to teammates.
You're nailing this. Now, you see hundreds of sticky notes from the retro. A real mess. But you organize them into 5 themes in just seconds.
Miro, I basically get back an entire hour when I use its AI tools for clustering.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people running actually enjoyable and actionable retros in Miro. Get your first 3 boards free at Miro.com. That's M-I-R-O.com.
Welcome to Drinking Bros Sports, brought to you by KillCliffCBD.com. Sit back, relax, and grab a fucking drink.
It's officially March when the madness arrives at MyBookie. Select winners from 63 tournament games in the My Bracket contest for a chance at $10,000 in cash prizes, and it's only one single dollar entry. Sign up today at mybookie.ag and use the promo code DRINKINBROS to secure your deposit bonus up to $1,000. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere with MyBookie.
Yeah, welcome to Drinking Bros Sports. We got one of our faves on the show today. I feel like I say that all the time, that we have one of our favorites on, but we've been very, very lucky with guests.
It's been a big guest week.
Huge.
Yeah.
Huge guest week. We had Brett Favre on yesterday. We got another Brett on. Brett Saberhagen is on today. Kansas City legend. How are you, buddy?
Doing great, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Where are you at today?
Well, I'm in Arizona, Scottsdale right now. We're here for a few more days. But I primarily live, well, Candace, my wife, and I live in Central Coast, California. Like you guys kind of talk about Austin, saying, hey, it's a great place to visit, but don't move here because it's so populated already. Paso Robles is the same thing. Come and visit the great wine country, but you don't need to live here. You can move on after you come and visit.
Yeah, it's beautiful up there. I've spent some time there, and I get it. I understand. Same way we feel about Austin, you know, everybody's moving here. I had actually been here maybe 50, 60 times before. So I'd been here a lot. It wasn't like I just decided to pick up and move, or we moved the company here. But I had been here. So when they had said, hey, would you guys like to move the media company here? They didn't have to twist our arms to do it. However, everybody else is now moving in. And that's when the disaster starts.
Well, I'll come and visit sometime soon, and you can show me around.
Perfect. And then I will visit you, sir, and not live there. Deal?
You got it.
No, I'm moving into your basement, actually. I hope that's okay. I like wine.
Sounds good, so. The man cave, right?
Yeah, I like wine, so I'll be there.
Yeah, Dan's a huge wine fan. Look, we got opening day tomorrow. It's here.
Finally.
Finally.
Everyone's fantasy baseball drafting in the Drinking Bros leagues, and it's I'm pretty hyped.
We have, what do we got, 8 leagues?
8 leagues, yeah.
That's more than we anticipated, but people are fucking nuts. So
people are nuts. Was fantasy baseball big back when you were playing?
I guess it was a little bit. I just, there's too many games to keep up with. I mean, football's tough enough as it is, but baseball is, I mean, it's nonstop, 162 games. You've got to be on top of it each and every week. I was doing an RBI league. It was strictly RBIs. And that was quite a bit to keep up with. But now if you got pitchers and all that stuff in 8 leagues, you're rooting against some of your guys that you have on certain teams all the time. So you can't draft the same team on eight different leagues. So that makes it a little tough. That's what I've never understood. Guys that have multiple fantasy teams, at some point in time, you're going to be going up against the guys that you have on a different team. So you're kind of almost defeating the purpose. So, but
there's
it enjoyable. And what's great about this year's season is we're going to have a few rears in the butts in the stands this year. So that's
good. Finally. Yeah. I mean, yes. So Rangers Stadium, they're going to go 100% day one.
100% day one. Now, are they going mask?
Yeah, they're going the full mask, but that won't last very much longer. I mean, obviously, I've been to a couple of games. I went to some, actually. I was out in shit, what's the name of that town? I can't remember the name of the town, but I was out watching the Royals play the Padres a couple weeks ago.
In Arizona? Surprise?
Yeah, Surprise, Arizona. That's where it is, yeah. I was at that game, and it's like, yeah, wear your mask, and it's like, no. Nobody really was, so, you know, it is what it is. But they were only at, like, 50% capacity, I think, and they had the seats, like, flex-cuffed up in the on the up position so you can't, like, move around and stuff. I guess that's one way to handle it. Another way is to, you know, just, you know, not care, but that's what I do. I don't care about things. Caring about things is what I do the most, actually.
Yeah, probably. It's probably your best attribute.
Yeah, it is. That's why I look this way.
Yeah, yeah. It's to be honest. And if you notice the excitement in his voice, he's raring for baseball to go. So.
I love baseball. It's my favorite sport. I love the days. My favorite days are when there's three games or three time slot games in a day, because I just have MLB.TV going the whole day.
All day.
No matter what else I'm doing, even if I'm doing shows right here, I'll still have it going on. On my laptop. So no, if I'm not paying too much attention to this, it's because I'm just kidding.
Yeah, he's a guy that's got baseball on, you know, every single device that he's got, a computer backgrounds, like all of it. I love baseball. However, as the years have gone by, they seem to be taking the fun out of it. I enjoyed your era the most, to be honest with you. That was my favorite. When you guys were playing, Ricky Henderson was my favorite player. That was my dude growing up. I enjoyed the characters in the game during that era. You in particular. I mean, just packing those, you know, boom. Those dips and getting out there and getting after it, throwing a little sidearm. Like, it was a lot more fun and there was a lot more personalities back when you played, and I feel like a lot of those guys are gone now, and Major League Baseball is kind of reaching for a superstar, whereas in your era, every single team had, you know, three or four dudes who was out of control.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. I think the big part that I don't care for nowadays is the analytics, and nobody manages or coaches with their stomach or their eyes anymore. It's okay. This is what you're supposed to be doing, and this is when we do it, and you got to follow the rules and your hands are tied. I don't know how many times that I've seen in postseason recently in the recent years that have gone by that, you know, managers are bringing in their closer in the fifth or sixth inning and not letting their starter go as long. So the game's changed that way. And again, I was back in the era where if something happened with a teammate, you can knock a guy down or hit the guy, and you know, they get up and they brush themselves off. It was part of the game. Now, if you have to throw a ball inside, guys are looking at you funny, wanting to fight you. So, and that wouldn't be a problem back in our day. You know, come on, it was only air and opportunity between us. So if you want to come on out, come on out.
Yeah, I think that adds a lot. I talked to some people about this last week, actually. Who are we talking to?
Ben Verlander was the most recent.
Ben Verlander, Justin's little brother. He does. He's a sports host on Fox. We're talking to him about some of the changes that baseball's made, some of the changes they might want to make. I think a lot. And we talked to the guy from the Wall Street Journal,
Jared Diamond.
Yeah. I like the DH. I don't want to see pitchers hit. Right. I mean, it's like having the guy washing dishes cook your fucking dinner. It doesn't make any sense, man.
Yeah.
Like, why? If you go to a restaurant, you don't want to see that shit. You know, if you go to a baseball game, I don't want to see pitchers hit. It's not exciting.
Right.
They're having problems with the games being too long. That's not true. That's what they think. They're having problems with the games being too long. The games are too boring. That is the problem. Right. So here's my solution. I'd love to hear your thoughts on this. I say this to everybody that comes on that's involved in baseball anyway. Get rid of the fucking pitcher hitting completely. All DHs. However, here's the problem. Pitchers can now throw at guys with impunity and they never have to go up to the plate and maybe get hit themselves. I say we go hockey rules. You can charge the mound. You guys can fight. Everybody gets kicked out or whatever the fuck, but there's no suspension afterwards. Like, unless you do something crazy, like hit a guy with a head.
Bring
with
a bat.
Yeah. Like if you hit a guy with your bat or something like that, sure, you're going to get suspended. But if you just go out there and rough each other up a little bit, why would you get suspended for that? How did that hurt the game? Has it hurt hockey?
No.
Like, there's been dozens of studies on this, because the presumption is that people get injured during those fights. Not true. Way more people get injured by big hits that happen as a result of enforcers not doing their job than ever got injured during the fight. So, again, more people are going to get – pitchers are going to hurt more people by throwing at people than are going to get hurt in the actual scuffle afterwards.
Yeah, people get hurt more when you travel faster, whether it's the ball or the person. Yeah. It's like a car accident impact in hockey.
And how great some of the better fights in baseball history, you know, like what's that dude's name? Kyle, whatever the fuck, from the Cubs that jacked up.
Farnsworth.
He just like speared that dude and fucking wailed on him. Nolan Ryan obviously beating the Christ out of Robin Ventura. That was ill-advised. I don't know who the hell thinks they're going to charge the mound on Nolan Ryan. Of all the people you could have chosen. That's like trying to fist fight LeBron James in the basketball court or some shit. He's like the biggest dude out there. What are you doing?
Did anybody ever charge the mound against you?
No. I don't, and I'm not sure quite why. I didn't hit a lot of guys just for the hell of it. I hit guys when it called for it, when they did something to one of our teammates or one of our guys got hit. It was more of a retaliation thing. So probably that's why I never got charged, because they, you know, there wasn't me being a douchebag and just drilling them because of this. And I think nowadays with the guys, the bat flips and that, there'd be a lot more guys getting drilled. You know, when I was playing, that the bat flip thing is kind of pisses you off a little bit. It's about go act like you've done it before. Go about your business, you know, celebrate after you come across the plate. So it's the game has changed. And I still love it. Don't get me wrong. Still enjoy watching it, but it has changed in a lot of different ways.
I think nobody charged you because you looked intimidating on the mound. You had that mullet. You were a bigger dude, and it was just like, there was something about you that it was like, I'm not going to test this guy. That's what it felt like to me when I watched you play.
Well, yeah, I don't. The mullet thing definitely. It was pretty scary. That's for sure. Now I'm losing it, but I've got the long COVID hair going in the back right now, so I need a little trim. But
the mullet's coming back in style anyway. So
You still have half really your mullet. Is. You still have half your mullet, so you're good.
The best, the half you want.
Yeah, you need a little more party in the back. That's all.
Yeah.
I always say, wait 20 years. Don't get rid of stuff. Hang on to it, because 20 years is going to come back into play.
Speaking of your era, by the way, talking about how it's the game's changed and you're not into analytics and stuff like that. I feel like one of the main casualties of that is the stolen base. And you played in like everybody was running back then, right? Yeah. Like, I mean, it was ridiculous. Yeah. The 85 World Series was again, every single Cardinal ran like a 4.340, I felt like, on that team.
Yeah.
What was it like pitching when you had these dudes like that? You were just like, if they get on first base, it might be a double.
Ricky Henderson, for example.
Yeah, in 82, he stole 130 bases. 130.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was – I took a lot of pride in holding runners. And the way I look at it is runners usually don't steal off the catcher. They steal off the pitcher. Mm-hmm. It's because of the pitcher and how slow he is getting to the plate, not varying his moves. Again, analytics, the study of guys now, they should be stealing a lot more. So I don't understand why they're not, because they can kind of figure out how a pitcher goes about when he's in the stretch, and how if he doesn't bury his looks to home or bury his time that he goes to the plate, stepping off, throwing over, it's pretty easy to pick up what the pitcher is kind of doing or falls into. Lester, for that matter. I mean, I don't understand why everybody that gets on first doesn't try to steal off of him. He won't throw over to first base. He'll step off the mound, but he will never throw over to first base. It kind of blows me away that guys aren't taking off left and right against him. The game is – I would love to see a lot more of that in the baseball world right now.
I feel like there's one guy who could have had a shot at Ricky Henderson's record. I don't think there's anybody else, but it was Billy Hamilton. I haven't seen a guy that fast stealing 5-6 bases a game. Well, his problem was he couldn't hit or get on base.
Right. Yeah.
But when he did get
first
on
base.
Yeah, if it was high school and he could just be a pinch runner for the pitcher all the time or whatever the fuck. I mean, I remember in high school we had a guy that set the state record for stolen bases in a season, but he never went up to the plate once.
Oh, really?
He was the pinch runner for our catcher, and our catcher was one of the better players in the state. So he would get on base. I think his on-base percentage was like 600 that year. And this guy would just steal bases.
And they would let him just keep subbing in over and over again?
Yeah, it was one of the rules in high school. If you had, you could designate a runner for one of the players on the field.
Man,
yeah,
you could light it up with Billy Hamilton. My God.
Yeah, but that's never going to happen. I mean, Ricky Henderson also had, let's see.
A couple hundred home runs.
Yeah, he had 3,000 hits, 55 hits, 1,400 RBI.
Yeah.
Pretty good.
How was pitching to Ricky?
I don't recall tons. I mean, I know I faced him tons. I remember more of when he got on base is burying my looks and keeping him from getting that walking lead. That was one of his things that he could do better than anybody. The guys wouldn't stop him from getting that walking lead. And if you're walking, he can just keep going and turning it into a run and get to the base, whether it be second base or third base, a lot quicker. So one of the great stats about Ricky is I think he had more home runs as a leadoff hitter than anybody has ever had as well. So he has some great numbers and great stats in a Hall of Fame career for sure. That one of the things you never wanted to walk him. You never want to give him that free base to actually try to steal second and third base.
Yeah, that guy was a monster. He did it all. It was my favorite player's kid just because of the personalities. Again, with the personalities, that was my thing. And that's why I love that era the most. You had George Brett on your team. How is he inside the dugout and off the field?
George was awesome. He was one of those leaders that led by example. He didn't have to call a whole lot of meetings. You saw by the way he went out and played on the field, his hustle, his work ethic, how he approached each and every ball game like it was his last, and the same thing with his at bats. But one of those guys that just, if you told him he couldn't do something, he was going to prove you wrong. But a great teammate. He made it easier for Mark Gubazon and myself, who came up as non-roster players. Well, Gooby was a roster player. I was a non-roster player out of spring training in 1984, but took us in because we didn't have a place to stay because we didn't expect to make the team that year. And let me drive. He had a Mercedes and a Bronco. He wouldn't let me drive the Mercedes, but he gave me the Bronco to drive until my vehicle showed up about a couple weeks into the season. But just a great guy. He was there for you. Questions. And he made you feel like you were part of the team rather than a lot of times where you have those veteran guys going, okay, you've got to earn your way and you've got to spend your time. And I'm not going to talk to you until you actually, have a couple years in. So he was one of those guys that took the younger players under their wings and really showed them the ropes.
Well, I think that's a good point. I mean, what's the ultimate goal there, to maintain the purity of the game or to win fucking baseball games? You know what I mean? Like if you have very talented young players like you and Goobs were on that team, were leaders on that team from a very early period, at least as far as performance on the field, what would have been the point of making you feel like less than on the team? That doesn't make any sense to me. I never understood that. Like, I like some of the ribbing. Like, if a guy hits his first home run and everybody stays in the dugout and doesn't congratulate, that's pretty funny. Or if they hide in the whatever the fuck, that's pretty funny to me. But just being dicks to rookies, making them carry your bags and shit, that's demeaning. That I don't like that. I never liked that. Even when I was in the Army, when people tried to like harass younger people and make them do menial shit for no reason, like, no, that's when we go to war, you got to fight too. Like, I don't want you to feel like you're fighting against me and the enemy. We're fighting together, man. That shit doesn't make any
brotherhood.
Sense.
Brotherhood.
Yeah.
Yeah. With you in particular, you just said that you weren't sure if you were going to make the team. I find it hard to believe that you won two Cy Youngs and didn't think you were going to make the team. That's the first time I've heard a multiple Cy Young winner say that. Why did you think that at the time?
Well, so here's kind of what happened. My first year in pro ball, I went to Florida State League, which was in Fort Myers, Florida. I spent 3 months there, got called up to Double A. So finished off the season in Double A. The next spring training, I got invited as a non-roster player to go to the big league camp, and never expected that. Just had a good year. They were looking at me as a prospect. A couple guys ended up getting hurt. A couple starters, Dennis Leonard and Larry Gura, had some injuries going into that season. So my first week in the big leagues, I was 19 years old. I turned 20 April 11th. Got a birthday coming up, guys. just know that I'm not getting any younger. But
it's fine. Yeah, well, hey, we'll send you a sleeve of dip. You know, what were you dipping back in the day?
Well, I was a red man guy when I was on the mound, but when I was in the dugout, I would do the skull.
There we go.
I've actually quit. I've been probably a couple years now that I haven't had a dip or a chew, and my mouth is probably really happy as well. But yeah, back in the day, it was a big old wad of red man while I was on the mound. But yeah, so that was just kind of a right place at the right time. And that's not to say that I don't think I would have ever got to the big leagues. But at that quickly and at 19 years old, I was very, very surprised. I was hoping to make the AAA team coming out of spring training and not being sent back to AA.
Got it. Yeah, because, you know, I feel like all of us here have known someone in high school who was a superstar, kind of gets drafted, never really ends up doing anything, and doesn't think they can make it. And then you meet the guys that, you know, shit, there was one kid I went to school with. He was positive he was going to be a major league baseball player, right. and he got pretty fucking close, but then he didn't blew out his arm, you know, same thing.
I mean, baseball as probably more than any other sport is the top 1% of the top 1%. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like for all there's what's 700 dudes in the major leagues. There's like 3,000 people in the minors, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
That's a very small percentage of even the best actually make it. And then if you think about the people that win a Cy Young Award, only 16 people in Major League Baseball history have won two.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of them right there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's it's bizarre to think about, like, how what the disparity is between people who are truly great at something and then people who are, like, professionals at it.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
In those 2 years, there's a lot of pitchers that had shitty years, I guess.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I'm looking at the stats here. You did pretty well.
I wanted to ask you about this, actually, because your stats in those 2 years in particular were ridiculous, but you were playing your home games on a carpet, right? How much do you think your numbers would have been, like, improved at all if it was all grass? If no one was playing on, like, how many outs do you think you lost to playing on AstroTurf?
Well, fortunately, we were pretty strong up the middle, and that's kind of what you got to do to be successful in baseball. So catcher, shortstop, second base, and center fielder, you've got to have those positions with really good, talented athletes. And I had Willie Wilson in center field tracking down some stuff. There wasn't too many balls that would get to the gap and through the gap with him out in center field. He always got a good read on the balls, but we were strong up the middle. So I don't know what the numbers would be, but so anyways, you're talking about having two Cy Young Awards. What about the luck of Dave Stewart? You want to talk about a guy that had a brilliant career when he had 5 years in a row that he won 20 games and not one Cy Young Award. That's just crazy numbers.
Yeah, that's wild.
So Stu's a great guy, a good buddy of mine. And I give him a little grief about that all the time. And one of the years was 1989, where I won 23 games. I'm not sure what his numbers were, but had a little bit better year than his. It just seemed like every year somebody had just a little bit better year than he got slighted on the Cy Youngs, but a Cy Young Award pitcher in his own right.
Well, you were both also World Series MVP, so he got his.
Yeah, he got his, and then he also saved a city that year too, up in Oakland. That was that was the craziest shit of all time.
1990, the earthquake.
89,
yeah, the earthquake. Yeah, the same year he was talking about.
Yeah,
Because that was Bash Brothers. Ricky Henderson was on that team.
La Russa managing.
Yep, up in Oakland, and do you guys keep in touch today?
And La Russa's up now.
We will run into each other once in a while. I got his number in the Rolodex, but we catch up periodically. Chili Davis is a good buddy of mine. So the last time I saw Stu was at Chili's 60th birthday in Napa. So we got a chance to kind of relive a few of the older moments of us playing ball. So it's always great to see Stu.
Yeah, that was my next question. Who is your homeboys? Who do you still hang with from back in the day?
Well, Gooby and I are still pretty tight. He does all the color for the Angels games, and so we talk periodically.
Does he get any tickets to see Mike Trout or what? Does he get any tickets to go see Mike Trout?
Right.
You should be getting free tickets. You won two Cy Young Awards, for Christ's sake.
Yeah, you don't
they're
get
both Philly boys, so they've hit it off pretty good. But probably Gooby. And Gooby is my daughter he's the godfather for Brittany, and she just had a grandson now, so she just had a baby about 4 days ago.
Oh, wow.
So we've got three grandkids going on right now, two from my older son. So Candace and my wife have been busy trying to get as much grandbaby time as possible. It's great to be a grandfather because you can get them all wound up and give them right back when you get worn out.
Yeah, that's where my kids are right now. That's exactly what my parents do. They get them all wound up, and then they give them back to me and my wife, and they're like, have fun the rest of the night. And then I shoot them a text at 10:30, and I'm like, I still can't get them to go to bed. So you look like that grandfather for sure. I could see you packing a little skull just right in the baby
them,
lip.
He gives them the big league chew, just pure sugar, chewing gum. Yeah. Just have fun.
Yeah, absolutely. they're awesome. So, yeah, everybody's doing well, thank God. Hopefully everybody in your families are doing well as well with all this COVID stuff going on. But, yeah, it's good to be a grandpa.
Yeah, yeah. No, look, everything's great here. I think we've all had it here in the studio, so.
We all got vaccinated the hard way.
The real way.
Yeah.
We got vaccinated the real way, so we were all fine. I was one of the first people, like, week one when it started, of course. So, three or four days, and I was good to go after that, and then I went on with my life. Do you collect baseball cards at all?
I have tons of them, but I quit collecting them. I've got actually boxes and boxes of tons of baseball cards, and I think there's some football that I collected for a period of time, and some basketball as well. So I don't think I ever collected any hockey cards, but I've got boxes of them. Yeah, what have you guys got? Some
tons.
Ones that you love?
And I have, they're all from the 80s, and I feel like those were the fun ones where they used to take fun pictures with, like, the big glove, or somebody had a boa constrictor. I think it was Ron Hubbard from the Braves had a boa constrictor around his neck during his card.
Yeah, and then there was the famous Bo Jackson one with the bat over his shoulders.
Yep,
right?
Yep.
When he played for the
here's a good story on Bo, because Bo and I used to lock her next to each other, and I used to get under his skin pretty easily. And there was one day that I came in, and he was in the clubhouse he was big into archery. Mm-hmm. He was in the clubhouse, had his target down at the other end, and he had his bow out, and he was shooting at the target. But on that target was my baseball card. I don't know if it was some kind of voodoo trick or something, but he was, I guess he was a little pissed off at me that particular day for whatever I did to him. But he was taking target practice at one of my baseball cards.
Mm. How is he in real life? Is he the greatest athlete that you've ever seen? Because I know a lot of players who have played with him have said that I've never seen a naturally gifted athlete like Bo Jackson. Was that true? Was the hype real about Bo Jackson?
100%. Yeah. I mean, even nowadays, I know Winfield was a great three sport player. I guess he could have been drafted in football, baseball, or basketball. Right. Number one, I guess. There's Jim Brown, and you can talk about Deion Sanders, but Bo Jackson by far for me, and maybe I'm a little biased because I actually played with him, but he just did things that were just silly. And you can still see highlights of the things that he did, throwing out Harold Reynolds on a 3-2 count with two outs, and him running at first base on a ball that bounces once, hits the left field fence, and turns around and throws it to Bob Boone on a line, and gets Harold Reynolds out at the plate, running up an outfield wall. I mean, you can talk about things left and right that he did that was just like super, super stupid. Just an unbelievable athlete. Here's another little good story. So periodically somebody would send in a birthday cake into the clubhouse, and you'd always get the younger guys to buy in by saying that we shouldn't eat this because it smells sour. So I got Bo to put his face about 2 inches close to the cake. And I took with all my strength, my hand on the back of his neck, and I just shoved it down into the cake, but it didn't go into the cake. His face just budged just a smidge and never got into the cake. So I proceeded to run around this table for my life. And that was probably the quickest that I've ever ran in my life. He finally stops on the other side of the table, and without running and throwing himself over the table, just by standing still, jumped from one side of the table to the other side and grabbed onto me and put me in a headlock and gave me a couple little rib shots. But just an unbelievable athlete to do some of the things that he did. He had just superhuman strength, and I actually never saw him in the weight room working out. It was pretty much all natural.
No, I think he just
that was my next question. Yeah, the rumor was he never worked out.
No, he just went to his house and walked out into the woods afterwards and ripped animals in half. just ripped them in half. And then he ate the animal, obviously, a lot of protein. So. Yeah, I can't imagine. That dude's like a fucking gladiator. He's one of those people that's just built.
Yeah.
You can't teach that kind of fucking, and his hand-eye coordination and stuff. Like, you can't teach that stuff, man.
No, and I grew up, because I'm an Atlanta kid, so I grew up with watching Deion Sanders, right? So I saw him play with the Braves, and I saw him play with the Falcons at the same time. And then, obviously, you know, I saw Bo Jackson play both sports. The difference was Deion was just good enough at baseball. He was, you know, fast. He could steal bases and he could get on, but he didn't have the skills that Bo Jackson did in baseball. Whereas Deion Sanders was, you know, an unbelievable football player for years and years and years. But I don't think he would have lasted very long doing both the way that Bo Jackson would have had he not gotten hurt.
Yeah, no, and not to slight Deion. Deion was an unbelievable athlete as well, and multiple sports star. So, you got to tip your cap to those. They don't come around very often.
No, not at all. You got the one guy here. The closest we have right now, I think, is the pitcher / hitter for the Angels.
Angels. Yeah.
Yeah. What are your thoughts on? What are your thoughts on that? Because being a pitcher, could you imagine hitting? You know. Clean up and all that stuff afterwards, or what does he hit? 3 or 4?
He's in the middle of the lineup.
Yeah. Could you imagine doing that?
I was watching the Dodger Angel game yesterday, and he came up and hit a line drive back off May and almost clipped May, who was pitching for the Dodgers at the time. But he's fun to watch. And hopefully, you know, his arm's completely healed and he's able to, throw a full season, because he's fun to watch on the mound, 100 miles plus, and just swinging the bat like it's nobody's business. I think he's got in spring training, a hit in every game except for one.
Yeah.
With a lot of power. So it's a special person right there.
He also struck out the reigning MVP and hit a home run off the reigning Cy Young Award winner within a week.
Yeah.
Which it's spring training, so whatever, but still, what the fuck, man?
Yeah.
I don't think maybe anyone has that on their resume.
Probably not. No, I can't imagine. At any point. I can't imagine how it would have happened unless it was just a fluke thing with a pitcher that happened to tee off on some Cy Young guy, right? I mean, that's the only way.
So if you have a pitcher that can hit like that, that guy can swing the bat. You don't have to worry about getting a DH.
Well, I mean, he's in the American League, right? We talk about this all the time. I don't understand why the Angels have used him the way they do. I don't understand why he would even be considered as a starting pitcher. He should be a DH every single day, and he should be their closer, and he should come into the game late in the game, and if you lose him or have to sub him into the outfield or wherever after that, if things go wrong, then that's how it is. But using him as a starting pitcher, you can talk about this. You guys are creatures of habit.
I'm on board with that theory. Yeah, 100%.
You guys are creatures of habit. You go through the same routine. You want to be on a 5-day or whatever, 4-day rotation back in your day, in some cases, but a 4-man rotation rather. But you want to be on the same because you want your body and mind to be in peak physical performance condition for that event right there for that night or that day, whatever it happens to be. Going back and forth between having to hit and concentrate on looking into the pitchers you're going to be facing and stuff like that, the lefties and the righties, the strategy, how the positioning is going to happen, all that stuff, and then doing the same thing as a pitcher at the same time. No fucking way you're going to be able to do that as a starting pitcher. I don't believe it. I don't think the human brain can handle that.
Well, and now the fortunate thing that he has now is that they don't let him go as long in the game and throw as many pitches. But as a starting pitcher, I know that after I throw a game, my arm is going to be very stiff that next day. And to swing a bat and be as loose as you should be to swing a bat is not going to be there the following day. Mm. So, again, now that you got so many different types of treatment, hyperbaric chambers, you've got, all kinds of things going on in the training rooms that can actually get you loose and get you feeling better in a quicker period of time. So your recovery time is a lot quicker. But back in the day, I don't think he would be able to do that. And I would be curious to hear what his average pitch count is, but I would think the following day he's got to be really stiff swinging the bat.
Brett, we got some sponsors that pay for this show to be on the air. mybookie.com. Whether you're a basketball fan or just a fan of sports in general, everyone knows that March is the time for college ball to shine. With MyBookie, there is no shortage of opportunities to cash in. Play in the MyBookie bracket contest for a chance at huge cash prizes or pick spots with individual tournament games, which I love, championship futures or in-game live betting, which Hot Bob and Fake Dan are the messiahs of. If college ball isn't your style, take a swing at the Major League Baseball lock of the season with a bet you simply cannot lose. MyBookie has lowered the over-under on runs, that's the total of runs, to 0.5 for the opening day matchups between the Dodgers and the Rockies. That's the Dodgers and the Rockies. And since there are no ties in baseball, all you got to do is get in a bet to win. Sign up today at mybookie.ag and use the promo code Drinkin' Bros to secure your first deposit up to $1,000. That's promo code Drinkin' Bros to claim your free cash bonus today and add even more excitement to the sports you already love.
That's right, and you can bet with or against us. I would not bet against Ross lately.
You've
been lighting these guys up. We're going to get a letter from my bookie, and it's not even going to be like a letter. It's just going to say, hey, bro, what the fuck?
Dude.
Can you stop with it? We did this. We did the same thing.
$7,000 I went off of Gonzaga last night.
The national championship, the Clemson one.
Yep.
Ross and I both betted at 18-1
before the season started.
For who?
For Clemson. The year that Clemson won, I put $3,000 on an 18-1 before the season started. And that was our first year with my bookie. That must have been like, what the fuck, dude?
I know we won. I think we won a total of $48,000 off of that. But it was preseason. That was our pick of the year.
Yeah.
And then we just went all in and we did it. And then this year, man, I've been riding Gonzaga crazy. I know that's, a trope at this point. But, dude, they have beaten every single first half. Should I be telling this about my bookie? Sorry, my bookie. I don't care. I'm trying to take you down. They've won every single first half and then whole game. So I've been betting the first half on Gonzaga and then the full game on Gonzaga. They have smoked everybody and they have not
just doubled
missed.
Down, man.
Yeah.
They beat USC by the same amount they beat Pacific by earlier in the year.
Yeah.
USC, who looked on fire against everyone else. They're 14-point favorites against UCLA right now, and I think they might win by 30.
What about that UCLA-Michigan situation? My God. You were at least somewhat happy about that, right? Come on.
I was unbelievably happy. Here's the honest disclosure, because a buddy of mine had called, Xander, I think people know him.
Yeah.
He had called on the way home, and I was checking on the house, and he goes, holy shit, dude, you just won like $7,000 off Gonzaga. Because we always post it in Drinkin' Bros Sports. I post the bets every day in our Facebook group. It's private. Anybody can join, so just sign up, and you can see our actual bets every single day in there. And he goes, holy shit, you just won $7,000 off Gonzaga. He goes, dude, who are you taking in the Michigan-UCLA game? And I was like, man, let me check the point spread. And I had to go into the house and check on the contractor. But full disclosure, my money would have gone on Michigan. It was only 6.5. And I thought for sure they would smoke UCLA. I didn't get a chance to watch one single play of that game until he called me on the way home. And he said, holy shit, Michigan lost. And I was like, what was the score? And he goes, dude, it was 51-49.
Yeah, pure under porn. As we like to say.
Yeah. It was 100 points. What were they playing? It was like Hoosiers.
The over-under was probably like at least 118, if not 125 or somewhere in that
UCLA
general area.
Usually has a fairly low over-under because that's how they play.
But a typical over-under in college right now for the tournament so far has been about 132 to 134, right? So they're going to be in like the high 110s, so 118 probably around there. 100? That's not even fucking close.
No. I almost didn't believe it. And I pulled it up on my phone, and sure enough, that's what happened. And I was like, look, I was heading back to the hotel. I was like, I'll put on the highlights when I get there, the lowlights of that game. Michigan had clean looks at 2 3-pointers at the end of that game.
The one that their guard missed, I forget his name, was literally, I texted you this last night, it was as accurate as a miss could be.
Yeah.
It was so close.
Yeah. Sometimes it just doesn't go in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But there do seem to be people where it always goes in. Michael Jordan as a freshman hitting that wing jumper, right?
Yeah.
Right, to seal that victory. Him shooting over Byron Russell to hit that jumper. It seems like whenever Jordan did it, it worked.
Yeah.
Maybe that's, I don't know what that is, though.
Robert Horry for the.
Robert Horry.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, anyway. You know, with that, since we're here talking about my bookie, I'm going. I'll go ahead and make my bets now. My bookie bets now on this show because it'll air this weekend and it's my son's birthday, so I'm gonna be flying home for it. I'm gonna go first half Gonzaga again, whole game Gonzaga again because I think they win by 20 points.
Well, that's the thing. They've been bombing everyone, and the first half line's always just literally 50% of what the line is. Yep.
And then Baylor, when I checked last night on my bookie, it was 5.5. Is that still?
Let me look on my bookie again.
I think it is 5.5.
And I think the over under is 134.
Yep.
Okay, so if it is 5 right now, last night it was 5.5. So people are betting Houston and they believe in Houston.
It's still 5.5.
Oh, it is. Yeah. Okay.
And it's 135 now. The over under went up a point.
Okay.
So people are betting the over on that game, which makes sense because Houston can score, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Baylor can get hot too. I mean, their guards are fast as fuck, man. Holy shit. They just can't shoot free throws.
Yeah.
If Baylor hit the league average was about 78% of your free throws for guards in college basketball, they would not lose a single game, probably ever.
But, no, and for that reason, I know we said this at the top of the year and we're sticking with it. It was Gonzaga and Baylor and everyone else, and that's what we said before this season fucking started.
Yeah.
And that is exactly what happened. That's why I don't really feel bad about Ohio State or anybody else, because I don't think any of those teams are even close to the caliber that Gonzaga and Baylor are this year.
No.
And I just hope we get to see that as the championship game.
And this is also the first year we're getting to see the fruition of the one and done. This is the real fruition. Look at the teams that are in here. UCLA is the only big name team in this fucking Final Four right now. And they're not really a big name team like they used to be.
They don't have big names on the team.
No, they don't. So we're looking at fucking four mid-major teams basically at this point.
Yeah.
That are, I mean, they not only have they made it to the Final Four, but most of them have dominated their way to the Final Four. Kentucky is done. Kansas, done. UNC, Duke, done, unless they change the way they fucking recruit over there, right? I mean, it's just not ever going to work out for them again, which is, I don't really give a shit one way or another, but it is what it is, right? You would think those programs would start trying to weave their way back into success somehow.
Yeah, I just think they're going to have to change the mentality of the way they recruit and everything else going forward, but I like it. It's
great for college basketball.
It's great for college basketball. It's been fun to watch. And I haven't seen Waco on fire like that since David Koresh.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. But where's the fucking soundboard fake, Danny?
No, where is it? So that's where all my money is going.
Yeah.
This weekend, I will probably pre-bet that tonight and then drop that in Drinking Bros Sports on Facebook.
You can also, if you really feel froggy about it, I picked Baylor before the season started. I've already got one bet on them, but I'm thinking about doubling. It's plus 325 for them to win the title right now. That's not a bad bet.
It's 3-1.
Yeah.
It's great.
That's anything can happen. And once you get to that last game, anything can happen.
I agree.
I don't think the Fab Five necessarily should have lost to UNC that year. I thought they should have done better.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't. Right? You never know what's going to happen.
Or,
UNLV.
Yeah.
UNLV. Yeah. That's probably the best comp for this Gonzaga team.
Yeah.
Right.
Because they kind of came out of nowhere, have a great team, but no pedigree.
Yeah.
Not people will challenge whether that matters or not. And for Gonzaga, maybe it doesn't. Sometimes it doesn't. That 80 fucking five Kansas City Royals World Series team we've been talking about today. Not really a whole lot of championship pedigree on that team, right?
Yeah.
But they got it done. Some maybe Gonzaga will get it done, but there's always a chance they don't. I think 3-1's good enough odds for me to lay a bet on Baylor.
Value pick is what Fake Dan calls it. And I agree with you because if they do match up, anything can happen in that game.
Even Houston's kind of close at plus 750. UCLA is plus 2,600. And now that's because they're going up against Gonzaga, obviously.
Yeah.
But they don't really belong there, right? They're the Notre Dame of the CFP.
Yeah.
Let's be real.
They're also missing, it's like their run's incredible too, because they're missing their two best players.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they have been for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So good for them.
Yeah. I mean, they're fun. And I will say, like, the only way you're going to beat Gonzaga is if you muck it up against them. You cannot beat them in a track meet, and UCLA mucks it up. But you know what? Gonzaga scored 100 on fucking Virginia.
Yeah.
Yep.
Their whole thing is to muck it up.
Baylor's going to definitely try to get them in foul trouble early. That's their whole game plan. It's got to be, right?
Attack,
even if
attack.
They don't, attack, attack, attack all the time. Like, they're going to want to attack in half court, not full court, obviously. Because if you get into a full court running match with Gonzaga, you might be in trouble.
Well, if there's anyone that'd be okay, it'd be Baylor.
Maybe, yeah, we'll see. We'll see. That'll be, well, we'll see if that game even happens. We don't know yet.
Yeah, yes. I'm scared about the Houston-Baylor matchup. Big difference in KenPom between Vegas and KenPom.
What's KenPom say?
It's a 1-point line on KenPom, and it's a 5-point line on from Vegas,
yeah,
which is a huge discrepancy.
Yes,
KenPom's typically more accurate, too.
We'll see. No. I've not believed in Houston all the way here. That's the only money I've lost besides day one. Day one, once I figured out it was going to be an underdog year, I switched all my bets day two going forward and have housed in every single round except for Houston. I have not been able to figure out. I just didn't believe in them at all.
I don't blame you.
Yeah.
They're anonymous.
Yeah. Strange.
But they're like that in football too. And every now and again, just because they prioritize athleticism, kind of like Florida does, but a little bit better, frankly, these days in Florida, they can score in pretty much every sport they play in. Even in baseball, they score well.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's an athletic school. What are you going to say about that?
Yeah. Next up, we got Brewbag.
Yeah,
Brewbag. D'Anthony? Brewbag.com, BRUBAG.com. We've got our own custom boards there.
Yeah, it's coming up.
Yes. They're in the mix now. Are they sold out, Dan, or are we still
good
to go?
No, they're sold out. Yeah, okay. I think we sold 50 over the weekend, actually.
Yeah, there's a bunch of them, man, and they were kind enough to let us partner up with them and make us our own personalized brew bag sets. Grab yours today, and then we'll play you once COVID is over and we are back to tailgating and partying in your area.
They're really easy to travel with. I mean, they're made out of really sturdy wood, but it's not cumbersome. It's not huge. It comes apart. The legs come out, so you can pack it all together and bring it with. It's super nice.
You can play cornhole or our standing version of beer pong, which we like.
It's called Brew Bag. So Brew Bag is the name of the game, and basically what it is you have the same number of holes in the cornhole board as you have cups in a game of beer pong, and you throw the bag at it, then you pick your cup up and drink if the other guy hits. Like, there's for these days where there's a lot of regulations about people touching stuff and all that nonsense that's going on, if you're going to be in public somewhere like that, this is a game you can actually play without violating any of those rules. You can use the code Drinking Bros to get a little discount on
that. Go to brewbag.com before these sell out. Big fan. And we'll be playing you when we come to a city near you. Last but not least, drinkingbros.com. All the merch is in, including the Drinking Bros sports shirts are in. Finally, in the store, we also got those Pornhub shirts live, too.
Yeah, those are live. The Ignore Everyone Deployed shirts are live. The APAC stuff is going to be coming on soon. We also have, I have hoodies on the way to me right now to make sure that they're quality enough to be used by us, and they'll be out here in the next week or two as well.
Yeah, looking forward to it. So the merch is out. Go to drinkingbros.com today. Click that merch button, and you can find all of our new items there. The Gay for Straight shirts have been going real fast.
Yeah, especially now that Chuck Liddell's wearing it around out in public. That's so funny. Like, somebody might feel some kind of way about that, but literally zero of them are going to say a goddamn word to Chuck Liddell about it.
Yeah. Not one person.
No. He loved that shirt, by the way.
Exactly. Brett, we appreciate you letting us get through this here and pay for the show.
For sure. I mean, and if that's the case, then maybe that's just a reflection of what people expect out of starting pitchers these days. Like, a quality start is still 5 2/3 innings and three runs or less, right? That's a quality start.
Is it 5 2/3? It's just five.
No, it's five. Okay. Well, it's 5 2/3 innings and three runs or less. Now, I don't know. You had like almost 80 complete games in your career. No pitcher that's starting pitching right now that's just coming up will ever get 80 complete games. Not a fucking prayer. There's no chance. They're also never going to get close to 300 wins.
And he was laughing at you, Dan, when you were saying the game was 5 2/3. Because what did you average night in and night out? What do you think you averaged inning wise?
So here's another good story. I have no idea what I averaged, but
I'll tell you. Give me a second.
Storm Davis got traded over to us. I'll tell you two quick stories on the amount of innings that we felt. So Storm Davis got traded over to us from the A's. I forget what year it was. And we always called Storm a five and fly guy. So he'd pitch five innings, and then for whatever reason, he would be out of the game. You know, whether, I don't know, whether injury or whatever, they just decided to make a change. Nowadays, that's completely acceptable. But back then, so we actually gave him a little crap about that, and he got pissed off. He goes, I don't know. And it's like, yeah, well, just kind of look at your numbers. We've been watching for a long time. And then Kevin Apier, who was a great pitcher in his own with the Royals, and he came up as a rookie, and he came out of a game, I think, after five or six innings, and he had the lead. And we ended up blowing, I guess they the whoever came in gave up his lead, so he got a no decision, and he was pissed off after the game. And I went up to him, got in his face. I said, "Listen, you can't expect to get a win if you can't complete a game. So don't get pissed off whoever comes in behind you. If you want to make a difference, then close it out, finish off what you started." So yeah. And George used to come over and yell at me. I was one of those guys that I didn't like to be patted on the back. I liked somebody to get in my face and give me a challenge. Mm-hmm. And George would do that. He came over a couple of times, you know, late in the game, seventh, eighth inning, and go, you know, if you get into a tight situation, he said, "You better get your shit together. Somebody's going to come out of that bullpen and screw it up for you."
So, yeah.
The five or six innings, I quality start. I'm calling my initials on that BS.
Yeah, so your average in your two Cy Young seasons was about 7.5, give or take, 7.5 innings per start, which is about what it should be.
Yeah, I mean,
to be honest, these guys are from your era, Tom House and Nolan Ryan. They ran these pitching academies. Obviously, everybody knows who Tom House was, or Nolan Ryan. Tom House was his pitching coach, a former lefty in the Rangers organization. He would always say that your arm is going to rust before it wears out. There is 100 years of baseball proving that to be true. Guys with long-ass careers that threw long-ass innings, and all of a sudden, people are just, like, the human body is the best it's ever been right now. Training is the best it's ever been, and somehow these dudes can't go fucking seven innings. Like, what do you think is happening there? Is it just low risk tolerance? Can they go seven? They're just not allowed to, or what's going on there?
Yeah, they're pretty much not allowed to. And sometimes their hands are tied. Yeah. It's kind of crazy. And the other thing that, you know, the analytics are talking about is, as soon as you face that lineup for the third time, when that third time the lineup changes, and that's when you take out the starting pitcher, because that's when they kind of start to give up some runs.
Right.
So that's part of the reason why the guys are getting taken out so early, is because analytics say that third time around, they're going to get to you.
What about the contracts? Because right now it's the highest they've ever been for starting pitchers. You know, what was Clayton Kershaw's?
180, I think.
Yeah. Massive. Right. I think that's part of it as well, where they don't, their money is so invested in a couple good starting pitchers that if they lose one of these guys, they would rather shorten the innings versus financially losing them for the rest of the season. Do you think that has anything to do with it?
Yeah, I'm sure it does. You gotta, and that's kind of that fine line where I call BS on that as well. You kind of whip your horse as long as you possibly can. And I know I've seen Kershaw out on the mound watching games and see him getting pissed off that he's getting taken out in the seventh inning or whatever it is, and he wants to go longer. And the numbers and the analytics and the front office is saying that it's time for him to come out. So yeah. I appreciate Clayton. His career has been unbelievable, and what he's done. And it was great to see him finally win a World Series, because you got guys that go, you know, maybe a career, and they don't get a chance to win a championship in whatever, baseball, football, basketball. So it was great to see him finally get a world championship and actually get a couple of wins. So that was kind of a knock against him, where he's probably the one of the best Dodgers of all time, let alone baseball. His numbers are just ridiculous, and he never walks anybody. His strikeouts to walks is another crazy number. So fun to watch. One of those guys, Bumgarner, another guy that comes to mind that just wants the ball, and he'll go 10 innings if you let him, you know.
Speaking of the World Series, I'm from St. Louis, and
to brag or anything.
Yeah. Is that a
humble
brag?
No, it's not a humble brag. No,
it's definitely not a brag.
So I have a couple questions. I wasn't born yet. I was born the year after this World Series, but both my parents are monstrous Cardinals fans. And this was probably the World Series that sticks out to them losing, you know, the most, more than the Red Sox in 04 or the Twins in 87. And you won the MVP for that 1985 World Series. I have a couple questions about this. Number one, did you guys care at all that you were playing an in-state rival in 85?
It was pretty cool. I think our sentiment was, we don't care who we play, just as long as we get there. So, but yeah, it was kind of nice to not have to travel too far. And I remember there was a few people that took the governor's train from Kansas City to St. Louis, and they would say each city that you went to, you would start out from leaving Kansas City, and there'd be everybody that you would see at the station was all wearing blue. And then halfway through, you would see, you know, blue and red. And then by the time you got to St. Louis, it would be a sea of red, everybody supporting their team. So, yeah, it was, it didn't matter who we played. We were just happy to be there.
And then obviously I have to ask, is Don Dechinger the real MVP of that World Series?
You know, you could say it was a multitude of things, but they still had the ability to get another out, and they weren't able to do that. They dropped the ball by the dugout. And we actually had a little round table with a few of the Cardinal guys a few years ago, when there's a few of the guys from Kansas City. And we talked about all the things that happened after that. And they basically said, hey, you can't blame Don Dechinger. You got to blame the pitchers that were had the ball that could have actually closed that game out, or a catch by the dugout. Well, so, but again, yes, Don Dechinger definitely helped out. But
well, I mean, you know, they blew
MVP, maybe. I don't know.
They blew a 3-1 lead in the series, right? So, I mean, it's not like it really. And then you guys kicked the shit out of them the next game. Like, it wasn't even the game you pitching against them. But I do want to know, like, you guys were right there on the first baseline. That was your dugout, correct? What was the reaction when that happened?
I honestly thought he got the call right. And then, as everybody, if you watch it on replay, obviously it was a bad call. There's no two ways about it. Honestly, I thought he made the right call when I was in the dugout. But,
right.
That's why I'm not an umpire.
Of all the officiating crews that exist in professional sports, baseball umpires get it right way more than anybody else. Statistically, I think 93% of all their calls are correct. I mean, that's pretty for as things without replay on certain things. Right. This is without replay. They get them right 93% of the time. That's an incredible amount. Now, unless it's LeVon Hernandez pitching against the Braves, God, where he's throwing a curveball that ends up 4 feet outside. Like, what was that? Yeah. Was that the NLCS in 97?
Yes.
Yeah. Holy shit. That was one of the worst days of my life.
Because
we're all Braves fans.
Fans up here, but.
All right. What about the pitcher from Detroit that had the perfect game going?
Man. Galarraga.
Armando Galarraga. Oh, my goodness. Son of
that's
a bitch.
Definitely got to be a little asterisk.
Wait, was that Angel Hernandez who did that?
No.
Who was it? Because Angel Hernandez is the worst umpire in the history of baseball. That guy's a piece of shit.
It wasn't Joe West, was it?
No, it wasn't Joe West. I think it might have been the black guy. What's his name? Laz Diaz. Was it Laz Diaz?
I got to go.
Huh?
It was Joe West. Okay, yeah.
Joe West, young man. That's a very common.
You sure about that? Joe was at first?
I like how he's fact-checking you, Fake Dan.
I got a...
We've got nine computers going
Jim,
here.
Jim Joyce.
Jim Joyce. There it is.
Jim Joyce.
You were wrong, Fake Dan. What are you screaming at?
You're the only one over there supposed to be looking shit up, asshole. Jim Joyce, by the way, very, very good umpire. And I'm sure he hates the fact that he was involved in that. And to be honest, man, they should go back and change that, because it wouldn't have affected the game.
Just go back and change it. I don't know why they didn't.
That sucks, because what have there been, like 23 perfect games in the history of baseball, something like that.
Yeah, and that's something you might not ever get back. You never had a perfect game.
You had a no hitter.
Yeah, I had a no hitter, but I came close doesn't count. So hand grenades, tiddlywinks, so on and so forth. But
23.
7 2/3. I think I got. I had perfect. Against the Brewers 1 year, but it's unbelievable.
Let's talk about that no hitter.
Throw that.
At what point during the game did your teammates stop talking to you? Because
the 90s were way more. Wanted to talk.
Yeah.
I never liked to stay by myself. So fly ball hit to left field. I think it was a fifth inning, and Kirk Gibson was playing left field, and he botched it off his glove, and they called it an error. So that was kind of could be an asterisk for me, but in a good way, I guess. He came in after the fifth inning. He said, after they screwed that call up, you better throw a damn no hitter. So
Kirk Gibson, not superstitious, what you're saying, because most baseball players would never say something like that.
But I actually, that was probably the last game that I actually had a no hitter going in for a long period of time. And I actually, after the seventh inning was done, I knew I had six outs, but I didn't want to look at it at six outs. I kind of just started going, okay, let's take it pitch by pitch, and right. we'll set up the hitter pitch to pitch, not out to out. And instead of trying to think about, I got six outs to get or five outs to get or four outs to get, I focused on each and every pitch. So I don't know if that made a difference or not, but I was able to get through the next two innings thinking of it that way rather than outs.
So you came up originally, what was your first year?
In 1984. 84.
You were 19 years old, right? In 84.
Correct.
So who are your, like these days, if a kid comes up at that age or at any age, actually, there are decades of baseball that's been on television for them to watch. They have, they're a fan of a certain team. There are people who they model their game after. Who was it for you? Who did you grow up watching? Because you grew up in Chicago, right, in that area?
I did. I was a big fan of the late 60 Cubs. So I was a big Cub fan.
That's rough.
First big league game I ever went to was at Wrigley Field. And then when I moved out to LA, I became a Dodger fan and became fans of,
Valenzuela and all those guys. Yeah.
Yeah. The 70 Dodgers, yeah. The mid 70 Dodgers and that. So, I like players.
Is there any particular player that you modeled your game after, or who you learned lessons from, or who you respected more than others?
I always kind of felt that I learned it. Here's the way I kind of learned how to go about whatever you want to do in life, not just baseball. But as a kid, I was the best player on my team my first year. So I went into that off season in California. You could play baseball year round.
Right.
I decided that I didn't need, because it was need to work out or practice or do any of that stuff before the next season. Well, we moved, so I was going to a different league. Nobody knew who I was, so I wasn't on a team. I had a tryout. I went through tryouts, swinging and missing. I think I fouled one pitch off out of 10. I fielded balls at shortstop. By the time I knocked them down and threw them over to first base, they would be wide. I think I caught a few in the outfield, dropped a few in the outfield, went home crying. And at that age, my mom said, if you're going to be successful, you got to work at it. And so I try to preach, it doesn't matter whether it's baseball or anything. If you want to be good at something, you got to work at it. You got to work a lot at it to be good at it. So that's what I kind of learned at an early age, and not modeling or hearing anything off of other people, but I just didn't want to embarrass myself anymore. But my favorite player, I used to love Jose Cardinal. He played right field for the Cubs. He had the big old, fro going,
yep.
And his hat would, I don't know how his hat got on his head with his hair being so big.
Yeah.
And he just had this little waddle that he would, he'd run, and he was fun to watch for me. But again, he had Ernie Banks and Billy Williams, and Billy Williams would, on the on deck circle, he would sit there and he would spit, and he would swing his bat and hit his spit. So those guys, Ron Santo, Bert Hooten was on the mound, Fergie Jenkins, Don Kessinger at short. So just a lot of fun guys that I love to watch.
Anybody ever loved baseball more than Ernie Banks? Is that even possible?
Let's play two.
Yeah. Like he was playing, let's be real. I know you're a Cubs fan, so I don't have to tell you this, but there he had a rough couple of 100 years there. So and still he was up motivated to play every single day. That's a dude that loves fucking playing baseball, right?
Ricky Henderson was the opposite. Ricky Henderson would say, Ricky, don't get paid for extra innings.
And he would also, seriously, he would say it in a third person. David Cross, a comedian, happened upon Ricky Henderson's phone number one time and called it, just so he could record the outgoing voicemail, which is Ricky said his full name, not Ricky, not Hendy or not whatever. He said Ricky Henderson about four times in his outgoing voicemail.
That's great.
He is the man he is, right? He's a Hall of Famer. What are you going to do?
He is. Yeah. We're big Ricky fans. And the guy that was in his era, that I wanted to ask you about on that World Series team that didn't get to play, who was like Ricky Henderson, was Vince Coleman. Was that the year that the tarp rolled up on him in that freak accident and he didn't get to play in the World Series?
Fucked up his Achilles.
Vince and I are good buddies, and we played together with the Mets, but he would always say, yeah, if I was in that series, it would have been completely different, and we would have walked away with it. I said, hey, if you can't outrun a tarp, then you're not that fast.
To be fair, Vince Coleman had 100 steals in three separate seasons. It's him and Ricky, and then some guy, another Billy Hamilton for the 19th century, though.
Yeah.
That did that.
Yeah, because right? I'm looking at this lineup, and I'm just trying to think back here. Like, Willie McGee, Ozzie Smith was hitting two.
Yeah.
Tommy Herr, Jack Clark was hitting four.
But Ozzie wasn't exactly hitting the ball, but he is a wizard, right?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, he hit 280 that year. I think.
Yeah.
He hit a home run to take to the
World Series.
The Dodgers to get to the World Series.
As a fetus, I was in attendance at that game. No, that was 85.
Game six, right?
Yeah.
Game six. Go crazy, folks.
Go crazy. Tito Landrum was hitting fifth. Cesar Cedeno. I mean, you had Terry Pendleton hitting seventh in that lineup.
And he won the MVP in 90 with the Braves, right? Like a couple years later, 91.
Yeah.
Was Keith Hernandez on that team as well?
No.
He wasn't on that
team
yet.
No, he was not.
Or was already gone?
He was on the Mets, yeah.
He was on the Mets until...
He was on the Cardinals and then the Mets.
Cardinals, I think he left the Cardinals in like 83 or something like that, yeah.
Yeah, with Vince Coleman, that would have been a nasty one. I remember seeing that and I was like, yeah, the tarp had rolled over him. How does that even happen? Were you there? Were you on the field during that?
No, that was, I think, the National League Championship Series when that happened. So we weren't already playing. It happened before our series and that. But, yeah, we were just trying to – we were scratching our heads. It's like, how do you get run over by a tarp?
Yeah.
But it's an automatic – it was an automatic tarp that actually came up from underneath the ground.
Oh, shit.
And it would roll out. But there was an alarm or sound to it. But he was stretching, and I don't know what he was doing, not paying attention or what, but it didn't stop and it just rolled up on his leg and broke it.
Oh, that's God. Yeah. I couldn't remember if it was NLCS or right before the World Series, but that's hilarious that he keeps reminding you of that. Were you with George Brett the night he pooped his pants at the Bellagio?
No, but it never gets old hearing about how George shits himself at least once a year.
Oh, you know, it couldn't have happened to a better guy, too. That's like, so funny.
Yeah, I sharted, you know. I was like, I went to farting. Yeah. And he loves telling the stories. He goes, everybody does it at least once a year. Oh, come on.
A year?
Yeah.
I think George, maybe not once every year, but come on.
I, no lie, I probably watched that video.
It might be twice a year now. He's getting up there in age.
That's true. Yeah.
Somebody check on George Brett, all right? Jesus.
I watched that video probably once a year. Just it's one of the best of all time. It was one of the first ones where they – you know, memed it and remixed it with a techno beat and everything. And like, it was playing in the clubs and all that stuff. Do you still chat with him?
I talk to George every once in a while, usually get down to spring training, but since everything's been kind of shut down a little bit, haven't gotten around to seeing him lately, but we'll catch up. It's like we never lose a beat when we talk, but haven't talked to, as I call him, Lou. He was nicknamed after, he used to love Looney Tunes cartoons, so his nickname's Lou. So I haven't talked to Lou in a while, but doing great, doing a lot of good stuff, helping out the Royals and their front office.
Well, speaking of doing good stuff, you've got a lot of charity stuff going on that we want to talk about before we get out of here. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us about your charity? It's called Saves Wings, I believe.
Absolutely, I appreciate you guys bringing that up. It's near and dear to my wife and I, Candace, who has gone through three diagnoses of breast cancer and has gone through treatment for each one of those, and it reoccurred the last time, so she had to do another treatment. But what we've created is, in the word financial medical toxicity, is meaning that a lot of people go, and everybody knows somebody that has had cancer, whether it be family or friends. Everybody has somebody that they know that is close to them that has gone through cancer. But the cancer is tough when you can't get your bills paid.
Right.
So we're created the Saves Wings Foundation, and you can go to saveswings.com and learn more about it. But we've created this to help families in need. We don't feel any family should have to make a decision whether they are going to pay their household bills or pay for their medical.
Right.
So, and when you got kids that are involved and you got your son or your daughter that are going through cancer and cancer treatments. And, you know, there's some treatments that Candace, she went through there, it was costing $20,000 a month.
Good Lord.
It actually glad that she was able to do that. And actually it helped her out to get rid of the cancer. We're trying to help families, and there's a lot of people that can't afford to pay for these treatments. So we're trying to find families and help these families out and pay their medical bills, whether it be the medicals or their household bills. But we're trying to make a difference that way. But we have cool events coming up in September in Paso Robles, California. If you go to the website, you can find out more about that. But we've got a singer-songwriter dinner, giving away some money to some families. And Chef Roshni is coming in and creating an unbelievable dinner. And we've got a golf event the next day. And she's also doing cooking classes. So there's going to be up soon different sponsorships and different ways that you can help out us helping these families. So I appreciate you guys bringing that up near and dear to our heart.
Yeah, I mean, what's the website again? Share the website again.
SabesWings.com. SabesWings.com.
Great. Cool.
We'll put that in the description. And also, you know, just to hammer on that point, something like 82 to 85%, depending on the year, of all bankruptcies declared by private citizens in the United States are declared because of unpaid medical expenses, mm-hmm. right? This is a major fucking issue. This is an issue that betrays how like hopelessly broken our healthcare system is, where we thought health insurance was the solution. But it was, I mean, all of this is super predatory, right? We're not taking care of our people. I'm glad that private citizens are taking care of our people now, right? But yeah. it's a shame that the government can't do its fucking job, which we should we shouldn't be surprised.
We don't even want to get onto that subject about how much money goes into research and not go into the families that actually need it. Yeah. So, but yeah, that's what we're trying to, we're not giving this money to research, and we don't have any paid employees with Saves Wings. All the money that we raise goes directly to families and that. Right. So, I appreciate you feeling the same way.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's, we all have our own political feelings about things, but the first and foremost thing we should all be thinking about is how are we actually solving problems, right?
Right.
And the first problem we have to solve is taking care of ourselves and each other. Mm-hmm. And we've failed abjectly when it comes to healthcare in this country. So we appreciate you actually doing something about it. It's easy to talk about the fucked up issues and stuff. It's a lot more difficult to actually get involved and help create solutions for people. So we appreciate that.
Yeah, because people don't understand, like, when you put on these events, and I've hosted a lot of these things, like, there is so much that goes into it, especially when it's yours, that it eats up a lot of your time, and you don't make any money off of this. And I mean, I'm sure you're stressed, you know, throughout the year trying to put this together and get all these people out there. It is a lot of work to do something like what you're doing.
Can I show you something real quick? This is my wife, Candice. But look at what she's working on right now. Saves Wings.
Yeah. always, right?
It's like 8 to 8 hours a day that we kind of knock things out of the ballpark and get things done. But it's enjoyable because it's a great feeling for us and a great cause. And well, this is our first one that we've kind of kicked off, so we're trying to make it unbelievable and just keep building from this year on. But we've got some pretty cool singer songwriters that are going to be out. Can't name them yet, but they're pretty famous, and we're looking forward to having them a part of Saves Wings as well. So, very cool stuff. We've got great board members, and we're doing our share to help out whoever we can.
That's great. I'm glad to hear it. I mean, this is one of the bigger issues going on in the country for a long time now, and we've offered. I mean, you know, I'm not going to get too political about it. This is a sports show, but we've every organization or president that's come into office has fucked this up badly fucked it up. Like, we have Dennis Miller used to talk about this all the way back in 2004. We have the 100% of money that we've set aside for healthcare, and for some reason we put 20% of it in escrow, right, and just hand it to some administrative organization we call insurance companies for no fucking reason. They don't provide any real service. They just help move money around and they take their scrape. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And we never hold the pharmaceutical companies accountable for anything. They can charge $27 to $29 on average for an aspirin. What the fuck? $180 for a fucking IV bag? Those things cost $6.
Yeah. Well, they donate too much money to people's campaigns, and
exactly.
Unfortunately, that will continue to go on.
Well, at least somebody's out there fighting a good fight. I'm sure there are plenty of people doing it. But you're certainly
helping.
I
swear you and Candace have been talking to each other on the side about all this.
I've been ranting about this in my private life and on the show for years now. I hate it. We tell people in this country that you can be as healthy as you can afford to be, and I can't think of anything more objectively immoral than that. That is just terrible to say to somebody. So thanks for helping, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Yes.
Yeah, and this is the point in the show where we get to the drinking bro of the week, which is someone who has inspired you or helped you become the person you are today. It can also be a lady, a broette, if you will. Who is a person that has inspired you or helped you become the person you are in this life?
Well, as of late, my wife, for sure, Candace. We've gone through COVID together, and we've learned so much about each other. We've been married for a little over 2 years now, but it seems like we've been married forever. But I've actually learned more about myself being married to her than my 54 years prior. So she's been very instrumental in my life. And I tip my cap to her and the stuff that she's gone through physically with the cancers and so on and so forth. So she's amazing. And my grandfather would be the other one who he got me involved in baseball at a young age. And that's why I started playing baseball, was because of him. So he was the other one that was very instrumental in where I am and what I've become.
Awesome.
That's awesome. Great to hear. You got any quick picks here on who you think is going to win the World Series this year?
Well, I always root for my old teams. Bud Black, unfortunately, I don't think he has a chance with Colorado this year. Just they seem to get rid of all their players from time to time.
They still Arenado's gone.
My pick, if I had a pick, I would say the Dodgers would probably repeat just because of their pitching staff and their lineup is unbelievable. But I like the Yankees and them going up against each other.
Yeah, we'll see. Yankees pitching is unless Kluber comes back and really reestablishes himself.
And they also have to stay healthy. I feel like the Yankees, that lineup just can't
Judge and Stanton,
keep it together for a full season.
I actually had to choose. I did my fantasy baseball draft last night, and I had to choose between Stanton and Jorge Soler, basically. That's who was up for that utility spot. I'm like, there's no way I'm picking Stanton. Like, if he stays, he'll outperform.
Stay healthy.
No question. But how can I take that risk?
Yeah.
Although at the same time, I drafted DeGrom to stash him on the bench for a while. So maybe I'm stupid. I don't know.
Yeah, but the weird thing is, with all the technology that you were talking about earlier with the frozen chambers and all that stupid shit, I felt like your era, you guys didn't get hurt a lot. How was that possible?
Now, you guys were just boozing it up, chewing tobacco, and apparently trying to shove Bo Jackson's face into a cake, which is a goddamn death wish.
Yeah.
How are all these guys getting hurt with every possible treatment out there in the world?
Yeah, I kind of scratch your head a little bit with that one. That's for sure. Yeah, with all the people they have traveling with them, between trainers and physical therapists and you name it, shrinks and all the equipment that they actually have to make themselves recover quickly. I don't know. I'm not really sure about that one. Maybe it's in the water. Who knows?
Just weak.
Maybe
weakness. That's all it is. It's weakness. Come on.
Yeah, weakness.
Everybody's throwing 100 now, so they're more physically capable than ever before. We have more technology to keep them healthy than ever before, and they pitch on average about 4.8 innings, I think, per game is the average start. For anybody that's not in the top 1% of Major League Baseball, it's some crazy number like that. That is pathetic.
Yes.
Hey guys, I'd hate to have to leave because this has been awesome and but I think my battery is going to die in a couple of seconds.
Oh, no worries.
Oh, good.
So in case it does, know that I had a great time and I appreciate you guys look forward to seeing you guys live in person in Austin.
Hell yeah. Anytime you come here, let us know.
Anytime you come here. Yeah.
I need a seat somewhere in that area. I think
that
time COVID will be, a little less, and we could sit a little closer than 6 feet apart.
Oh yeah. You can sit in our lap if you want. We don't care.
Yeah. And I'll grab some Redman, and really load up the jaw just for old time's sake. You know what I'm saying?
I hear you.
We appreciate you being here. We want to shout out the people who are always here with us every single day. Ruben Schneider, Craig Dulesky, Nico the Greco,
Bill Schofield,
Logan LaPointe is always here. And we appreciate you guys watching on YouTube and always commenting. These are our day one homies here on the sports show.
And they're
always here, and we greatly appreciate it. Brett, it's been fantastic. Go to sabeswings.com if you'd like to help out today. We appreciate you being here. For D'Anthony Holloway, Hot Bob, I'm Ross Patterson. This is Drinking Bros Sports. Good night, everybody.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we talk brainstorms with UX designer Brian. Let's go. First question. You thought you'd see everyone's idea in the team brainstorm, but you've got a grand total of one. Drawing board or Miro board?
Drawing board, right? Because in Miro, the team can add ideas now or later. And with privacy mode, we can keep them anonymous until they're good to share.
Correct. Next, you need the best way to explain your idea, but all you have is a few sticky notes. Drawing board or Miro board?
Drawing board, because, you know, in Miro, I could record videos, add text, images, links, and digital sticky notes, of course. Present my thoughts the way I want.
Right again. Now, you're looking for a past idea you thought was just genius. Only you could find... Oh, there it is. Drawing board or...
Miro. All our finished and unfinished work lives in one place.
And he's won.
Join over 60 million people getting ideas noticed in Miro brainstorms. Get your first three boards for free at Miro.com. That's M-I-R-O.com.